Welcome to Insight Petaluma.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Beautiful Friday.
Yes, it is. I'm Cindy Thomas, and I'm here with my co-host, Janice Peter Thompson, and our guest, Marilyn Clevenger. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Isn't it a beautiful day out?
It is, and it's the summer solstice.
Yep.
Oh, that's right.
First day of summer.
Oh, I did know that.
And the longest daylight hours of the year.
Huh. I guess I'll have to stay up past 8:30, huh?
Yeah. I was here last night until 9 o'clock and walked outside. I'm usually eating, walking outside at dark.
Right.
It was still light at 9 o'clock.
Yeah. Well, it's light. Yeah, it was light till about 9, and boy, I'll tell you, this morning when the sun was shining, it was way too early.
Yeah.
Super early.
Yeah.
So, oh well. So.
Anyway, so, this week in Petaluma, what do we got?
Well, I want to announce that, well, all kinds of things are going on in Petaluma, but I'm just going to make a couple announcements. That the River Town, there's going to be a discussion at the library on June 24th, and it's about the piece of property that is in escrow, I believe, to have a central park, part of a central park, or the first connector for a central park in Petaluma.
It's
where the McNair Peninsula is.
Right, I saw that. Is that the 40 acres that's in?
I believe, yeah. Yeah, and it's landlocked, so it's an interesting property, but it's a great property because it connects where the Red Barn is, and so you'll have this beautiful peninsula for parks.
So are we sure it's going to be parks since it's zoned industrial?
Well, it's landlocked, and so I do not believe it's going to ever be developed. I think it's going to be a park is what I believe. And the great thing is for the last 25 years, some of us have talked about the importance of having a central park, you know, starting from almost like Schollenberger, the wastewater plant, all the way up to Old Redwood Highway.
Right. You and I have driven that a number of times.
Driven it and walked that property.
Yep.
It's fabulous to walk.
Yep.
It's not an easy walk, but to get trails down there, it would be exciting. And I think this is like the first link to actually creating that. There are some trails up north. And then the other thing is, on June 12th Press Democrat, there was an article about Hearn Avenue in Santa Rosa. And Hearn Avenue is the overcrossing. It's actually an interchange overcrossing. And it was built in 1954 or something, the same time when 101 was being built. And all of these overcrossings are really outdated. And so the great news is that there was a cost connected to this project. And I know they've been working on it since 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Sonoma County Transportation and Authority, it was brought up at a citizens committee meeting. So that's why I know it's been since 2014, because mm-hmm. I was at those meetings at that time. And so the value of this article was it said it's going to cost $28 million to replace this overcrossing and the interchange. And it's kind of a mirror image almost of our Corona Road, Corona overcrossing.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference is that we don't have on and off ramps there. And so for, you know, the last 25 years, the city keeps coming back and saying, no, Rainier versus Corona. Corona costs the same as Rainier. Well, now we actually have a dollar amount, and we know that Rainier is about $80+ million, and now we know that this is $28 million for Hearn, which is Sonoma County Transportation Authority is going to pitch in money, and the city is, I think, about $20 million, and then Santa Rosa, I think, has to put in $8 million for it. So it's a joint partnership, but that tells me that Corona is probably only $20 million max to improve that overcrossing, because we want to put a rail a rail station at the corner of Corona and McDowell. And so it'll make it safe for people to walk, bike, for pedestrians, bicyclists, people with disabilities, and it'll be safer for cars also.
Mm-hmm.
So,
do you know when or if Corona has ever been studied for cost?
Corona has been, well, it's been studied, but the only dollar amount was, oh, it's the same cost as Rainier, so there's no difference. And I knew that could not be the same, because Rainier is a half a mile long, four lanes. Corona is only over a three-lane or a freeway. And so that's a huge difference. One might be about an eighth of a mile or less, maybe probably a sixteenth, and the other is a half a mile. And one is a regional road, one is a city road. And so that's why Rainier can't get state or federal funds where Corona could. And Caltrans always said that they always favored Corona for actually a full interchange.
Yeah.
and it would have been a heck of a lot less money. Plus, you would get the state and federal funds for it. So that's kind of exciting. And so that's going to be on September 23rd at City Hall. They're going to be talking about transportation. And when we talk about that, I think what's really important is if we look at a Caulfield crossing and a Corona upgraded crossing, the cost of those two are most likely less than what Rainier is, because they're very short versus the half a mile. So I think it's great because it's going to really pull out the true numbers instead of the fake numbers, which we've been hearing for years. So I think that's exciting. So that's on September 23rd. We'll let people update. We'll update as we have our, as it gets closer.
Yeah. And then I saw our very own Artist Courier had an article about the Gelati Construction being awarded the contract for the highway widening.
Oh.
I don't think it's been approved, but I think Gelati has applied.
Santa Rosa or Marin?
Here in Petaluma.
Oh, it was Team Gelati.
No, Gelati Construction.
Well, I think they're out of either Marin or Santa Rosa.
Oh,
because Petaluma is Team Gelati, so there's three different Gelatis.
Right, exactly.
And so when I was at the, I was doing a Democratic booth at the downtown Farmers Market, Wednesday Farmers Market, I met somebody that worked with one of the Gelatis, and he was the Marin County one, and he was really hoping that they would get the contract. So that's why I'm
That's
differentiating, and so I don't know what the difference is.
The approval is upcoming, and work is going to begin in mid-August.
That's very true.
So if you're a commuter, good luck with that.
That's very true.
Yeah, take the train.
Exactly. And that's why we really need a east side station at Corona, and that needs to be solidified because it is not.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's exciting.
And so we've been talking a lot about housing in Petaluma, and the Argus also reported that Sonoma State University purchased that 92-unit apartment complex down at the marina.
Right.
So we're going to have a lot of students living right here in Petaluma.
Is that for students, or is it? I thought it was for faculty, and I've heard it is not. It's not. The costs are just market rate.
Well,
my understanding is for faculty, but I'm not sure. But it's market rate, and the only thing I think it's great that they did this, but I think it would have almost been better if they had built something in Roner Park, because now we're going to have this huge complex of people from Sonoma State now having to drive to work.
Yeah.
And so, but it's good that it's happening.
I didn't realize it was staff. Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's staff.
Yeah.
And, well, another good thing that is in the paper is the health program spared from budget cuts.
Right.
Because there were some mental health programs that were pretty important for people, and they were cut from the budget, Sonoma County budget, and they were reinstated with, I believe, $6 million, if I read that correctly.
You won't hear me say this often, but thank you, David Rabbit, time.
Exactly.
Give credit where credit is due.
That's exactly right.
So thank you, David.
Yeah. He called me a... What did he call me?
A pip. He called you a pip.
Called me a pip right on Facebook. And you could either take it as a positive or a negative, but I don't think it was that positive. But
well, he does not have the best social network etiquette. And that's been said by many, not just me.
But he doesn't. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But and there's actually one other thing that we were talking about on Facebook, and that was the dredging, this group called Storm. And so I went to their presentation, and it was, an interesting presentation, but it seemed like there were some things that they were almost comparing apples to oranges, such as Bahia versus, the Petaluma Slough, river, whatever we want to call it. And so they're trying to pull together a group to put, they're trying to put something on the ballot to ask the citizens if we will pay a monthly fee to pay for dredging after the Army Corps of Engineers does one more final dredging. But this dredging, it's 14 miles of dredging. Mm-hmm. So my question is, how can you put a ballot measure on for a city when 3/4 of the dredging is actually in the county?
Yep.
And so it seems like that would have been one of the first things that you would have asked before moving forward with a ballot measure.
Yeah.
Because the legal issue is it's number one. You go to court, they're going to throw that out immediately.
Yeah. It's interesting because this is already a very involved conversation on Facebook. I think it's on I Love Petaluma or one of the sites.
Or iCare.
It's probably on many social network pages, but there's a lot of conversation going on. And just if you base it just on the conversations you read, I don't think we're going to get a tax pass for that.
No, I mean, and, you know, it was like $3 at the mobile home parks, and they were presenting it like, well, this is just a fee hike for the mobile home park owners. And I was at the meeting, and I said, no, they're going to pass that $3 a month on to each mobile home owner. They're not going to absorb the cost. Businesses at $7.50 per suite, they're not going to absorb the cost either. They're going to pass it on. And then homeowners were only going to pay $1.50 per month. And so the whole scale seemed to be a little off.
Well,
so
has it been established that the Army Corps of Engineers will dredge one more time?
It has not been established, and that's what Jared Huffman is working on with, you know, our city council and I'm sure with other congresspeople, you know, but it's not established. And, you know, so there's a lot of ifs.
Yeah.
And so I do not think that we're going to get anything on the March 2020 ballot on this.
Well,
what we really need is a JPA, which is a joint powers agreement. And if you have a JPA, you go to Novato, you go to Vallejo, you go to Sassoon, you go to all these different areas that need dredging. And you go in as a joint powers and maybe purchase something or put money into a pot for dredging. That's something that I would like them to look into because it just seems like it should be more of a joint powers agreement than a local issue because it's not a local issue. It's bigger than that.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I think it's, I support what they're doing. I'm glad that a group pulled together. But I think the first thing you always have to ask is the legal issues. And that's not quite what happened.
Well, time will tell.
Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, good things are happening in Petaluma.
Yeah, like the fair.
Well, the fair is here.
The fair came on Wednesday and will be 5 days long. So, you know what? I got two tickets right here to give away.
Yeah.
And I think at about 10 minutes to 12, we'll ask for maybe the third or fourth caller to call in.
And who do they call into?
Well, I'll give them a number.
Okay.
I'll give them a number at quarter till.
Okay.
How about around quarter till we give away tickets?
Okay, that sounds good.
All right.
So the third one?
Two free tickets for the
third caller?
I don't know.
For a first caller?
For a second? We'll decide it at quarter till.
Okay, that sounds good. I like that.
Sounds good.
Yes.
And if nobody takes them, let's you and I take them.
Well, then we can go to the fair.
Yeah.
Because Jerry's fishing today, so let's cross our fingers that he's bringing salmon home.
Oh, good.
Because I'm thinking about seeing if I can get on a boat next week. I won't. You know, if I take Dramamine the night before, and if I take it in the morning, and then I take it when I get on the boat two more times, I can chum and fish at the same time.
Yeah. Don't go on Friday.
No, I won't go on a Friday.
Right.
I promise you that.
All right. Yeah. Then I'll be stuck with Jason, and then I'll never get to talk.
This is kind of unusual.
We miss you, Jason.
This is kind of unusual.
It's Ladies' Day, and with that, let's talk to Marilyn a little bit.
I think that's great.
Yeah, Marilyn Clevenger is a holistic certified nutrition educator and consultant, and you're a lot of other things besides that. So, plus you're my friend, and so why don't we learn a little bit about you first? How did you get to Petaluma, and how long have you been here?
Okay. Well, I lived in Mill Valley in the 80s,
uh-huh.
and my longtime partner and I bought a 5-acre chicken ranch in Pengrove in 1990 and moved ourselves there.
Hey, can I ask you what chicken ranch or what street?
It didn't have a chicken ranch name that I'm familiar with. It was on the corner of Pengrove Avenue and it's been a long time now.
Yeah.
I've forgotten, but it's across the street from the Roaring Frog Farm. And it was my frogs that she can hear roaring.
Oh, really?
I had a naturally occurring vernal pool on my
great.
Property.
Oh.
It was fabulous.
Wow.
Really quite magical. But we had 5 acres and had five large chicken houses, 75 feet long, 25 feet wide. And I was planning to turn it into a healing retreat and make a dormitory and a workshop space. And After the first couple of years, my partner and I decided I'd go our separate ways, so I moved to Petaluma. My practice was in Marin. I became a clinical and alchemical hypnotherapist in 1990, established a healing arts practice in the French Quarter in central San Rafael. It was called the Alchemical Hypnotherapy Center of Marin with my partner, Susan Justice. And I practiced there for many years. And then when I moved up here, I developed a home office and saw a few clients there, but for the most part, I continued in Marin. And then in 2005, because I became a live foodist in 1994.
What is that?
That's a person who eats raw and living foods primarily. And I did that because in 1980, I'd been thrown from a horse, and I had a spinal cord and brainstem trauma, and I lost weight. I went down to 75 pounds. The doctor said, no treatment, no cure, get your affairs in order. Well, that wasn't good enough for me. So I started researching on my own. And I weighed about 85 pounds for about 15 years. And I'm 5'5", so that's not enough weight or strength or vitality.
Yeah, I think I was in third grade when I weighed 85.
If I had been too.
I was skinny.
So I found out about, through a nutritionist in Marin named Marilyn Cohen, I found out about a naturopath who had done a research project. His focus was on cancer. He had 237 people with stage 4 cancer. 236 of them became cancer-free on the raw food diet that he had developed. He's written a couple of books. We Want to Live, The Primal Diet was his first book, and he wrote a sequel to that, Recipe for Living Without Disease. His name is Ogenus von der Planitz, which, as you might guess, is a name he made up. He said, it doesn't matter what you call yourself.
What nationality is that?
he wanted to sound Greco-Roman. But he had been quite ill in his early teens. He had a severe high fever. Parents took him to the doctor. They said, appendicitis. Removed his appendix, sent him home. The fever never broke. But they took him back, and they said, oh, we misdiagnosed him. He actually had peritonitis, inflammation of the internal abdominal cavity. So they did radiation and chemo to save him. By the time he was in his late teens, he had both leukemia and bone cancer. And doctors said to him, no treatment, no cure. He went out in the woods to live. He started foraging, and he started getting well. So he looked for research that had been done on living foods diet, and he found out about the Weston A. Price Foundation. Dr. Price was a dentist who traveled around the world 4 months of every year studying native dentition patterns. He had, I think, 5 different cultures that he went back to year after year, African tribe, a Swiss village, an Inuit tribe, a couple of others. And they didn't eat any of the same foods, but what they had in common was perfect dentition and no modern Western disease, no cancer, no heart disease, no multiple sclerosis, no muscular dystrophy, none of our modern disease, no heart disease. And he was rather astonished, and he noticed over those 40 years of his study with these different cultures that occasionally a cooked or processed food would come into the culture. And one of the things these people had in common is that they all had wide jaws and perfect teeth and no vulnerability to cavities. And then when cooked or processed foods would be brought in, the next generation of children would be born with narrow jaws, crooked teeth, and vulnerable to cavities. And there were a couple of instances where they brought in cooked or processed food and then reverted back. And the next generation of children reverted back to wide jaws and straight teeth and no cavities. So Ogenus studied what Dr. Price had learned, and then he developed a research project himself with 237 people with stage 4 cancer, went through a 2-month transition onto his primal diet. Within 6 months, 236 of those participants had become cancer-free. They also had gotten off all other meds for all other disease conditions. and achieved perfect health. It was an extraordinary result. He wanted to do a follow-up study, and the medical powers that be would not permit him. So he went to Thailand and bought a farm, planning to do research there. He told his girlfriend, "If anything happens to me, suspect Monsanto." And 2 months later, with his second visit to the farm, he went on the balcony out back, and it collapsed under him, and he died in the fall. So we lost him. He was a tremendous asset to nutrition and health. There's information about him and his work can be found on Facebook. There's a Primal Diet page. So,
and what is the name of the page?
I think it's called The Primal Diet, but if you look for Aajonus, A-A-J-O-N-U-S, Vonder Planets, P-L-A-N-I-T-Z, Vonder as it sounds, I think you'll find it.
You know, it's interesting. I'm a dental hygienist, so I remember when we were doing tooth morphology, they always said, oh, you could walk down the street, and if you picked up a tooth, you're going to know what that tooth was. And I thought, oh, God, I would never know that. Well, I can walk down a street, and I can pick just a single tooth, and I know exactly what tooth that is. But I was in an archaeologist's archives, and we were looking at different jaws. And it was so amazing because the teeth were very flat because of the type of foods, which were raw foods. A lot of grains and raw foods were eaten. And so the teeth were very flat, you didn't see cavities because it was really processed foods and, you know, sugars that started, you know, we had cavities. They definitely had some periodontal disease, and it was probably more just from use, you know, chewing and the type of chewing that they were doing. But it's interesting when you're talking about the jaws narrowing and widening. It's interesting, like sometimes people will have very seldom third molars, 3, 4, and 5th molars, or they'll have extra teeth. And a lot of times that's just, you know, evolving out eventually. But it's interesting what you're saying about the jaw narrowing, and then when they went back to the other diet, that everything would have widened out. And so,
Dr. Price had been inspired by the photographs he'd seen of African natives on the cover of National Geographic magazine with these perfect racks of teeth and wide jaws. Well, when I went on the diet, it's a 2-month transition. Aajonus strongly recommended against anybody suddenly changing their diet dramatically. For one thing, if you've been on what is known in the nutrition world as the standard American diet, also known as the SAD diet, if you were to transition quickly from that to a vital living foods diet, you might be overwhelmed by the detox that you would experience. So I went through the 2-month transition. He explained to people that when you transition onto raw and living foods, your body, it takes about 2 months for your body to decide it can trust you to feed it properly. And he said, no matter whether you're overweight or underweight, at the end of that 2-month transition, you'll weigh 10 pounds over your healthy weight. And at 8 to 10 months, if you continue on the living foods diet, your body will spontaneously drop off that extra 8 to 10 pounds. Well, that was exactly what happened to me. I went from 95 pounds to 118 pounds. In 2 months, after 15 years of trying. And I had even tried eating bacon cheeseburgers and milkshakes, and I actually lost weight on that diet because it wasn't enough vital nutrition there for me. So I was amazed and impressed and thrilled to have recovered my health because I've been a lifelong athlete. I was a ballet dancer and a highly competitive gymnast in high school, qualifying to compete in the Olympics. I was a serious athlete, and to be less than vital was very distressing to me. So I was thrilled to have this result, but I was also very nervous about cholesterol because I was eating 6 raw eggs a day in fruit and dairy raw milk smoothies. It seemed a little bit crazy, but when I was a competitive gymnast in high school, I used to eat instant breakfast with 2 raw eggs in it, so I knew it wasn't going to kill me. But at that time, you could drive up the highway and see a billboard warning you don't eat more than 2 eggs a week or you might be risking your health. So I went and had a cholesterol test done. And the nurse came out and called me in and asked me to sit down at the table with her. And she said, "We want to know what you've been doing." And I went in there expecting a bad result. And I said, why was my test that bad? And she said, well, no. As a matter of fact, you had the best cholesterol test we've ever seen by far. So we want to know what you've been doing. And I said, well, I've been eating 6 raw eggs a day in a fruit and raw milk smoothie. And she said, well, you can't be doing that. And I said, I can. I'm going to continue. And I eat 4 raw eggs in my smoothie. When I started doing it, I was using bananas and strawberries because those are 2 of my favorite fruits. But when I went to nutrition college, I learned that those are the 2 fruits highest on the glycemic index.
Which ones? Banana and what?
Banana and strawberries. They measure highest for concentrated natural sugars. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to have a lower level of sugar, even though it was natural sugar. So I mostly do raspberry and blueberry smoothies. And I often add organic powdered raw chocolate, which is, of course, makes it even more wonderful. And when I put the chocolate in, I use a little bit of organic liquid stevia to make it sweeter because the chocolate has a little bitterness to it. So I have a smoothie every 2 out of 3 days. It's been an amazing experience to have this level of health and vitality. And because I'd been a competitive gymnast in high school, I was very familiar with the off-season body and the fully developed muscular condition of the gymnast. And when I went on this diet, I watched my muscles build themselves. I wasn't working out. I wasn't particularly exercising. Huh. And I was watching. I'd drive to Marin to my practice, and I could see the bulges in my forearms building up. That was very impressive.
So what kind of food?
So the other aspect of the diet is raw green juices, and this is part of the magic formula. So the recipe is 1 whole bunch of celery, 1 whole bunch of parsley, and 1 whole either zucchini or cucumber seasonally, depending on which is in season. When I juice, I make double that amount. And the reason I do that is after a couple of years, after Ogenis did his cancer study, he continued to see a lot of those people as a nutrition consultant, and he noticed that only about 80% of the people had stayed on the diet, and he wanted to know why, so he pulled them. And the 2 main reasons were too much effort and too bland. So he went into the laboratory and spent a great deal of time developing sauces to make raw vegetables more appealing, and developing a way to do the juicing without doing it every single day. So by using double the recipe, that makes 8 cups of raw juice, and I stir in about 1/3 of a cup of raw honey very thoroughly, and then I dispense it into 10 to 12 ounce jars. And just for the fun of it, I use jelly jars because I find it funny.
Yes. I like jelly jars.
It's a great use for jelly
exactly.
jars. Exactly. Little red and white printed caps. So that will keep for 3 days. On the 4th day, the nutrients start to die. They turn brown and they sink to the bottom. Up to that point, the juice is green and the nutrients are in the top of the jar. So I drink 1 or 2 a day, depending on what other nourishment.
So just like a jelly jar size is what you're drinking?
Yeah, and I might drink 1 in the morning before a smoothie and 1 in the late afternoon. Parsley is on the list of superfoods, high concentration of nutrients, particularly trace minerals, which are so critical to everything in the health of the body, cellular growth, electromagnetic flow, and it works really beautifully in concert with the macro minerals that are in the raw milk. So you can get raw milk in Petaluma at Sprouts. It took me 5 years of campaigning to get Whole Foods to carry raw milk, and when they went public, their new board decided that it was too scary. So they stopped carrying it. They thought they were going to have lawsuit problems.
Which brand has the raw milk?
So Organic Pastures is the raw milk dairy, and they're particularly wonderful because not only do they produce raw milk, but they have a movable barn. So the cows can stay in the pasture most of the time, and the milking barn goes to them.
Well, because, it's interesting, it's like the soils are being depleted. you know, of the nutrients that are going into plants. And so how do you measure?
Well, that's true of the soils where people are farming the same crop over and over again. But
right.
when people are rotating crops, it re-nourishes the soil.
Right.
But these are pasture
right.
lands that are specific to the cows grazing.
Right.
So these soils aren't being depleted in that same way.
But I'm going actually just to back to the parsley, you know, growing the products. You know, there's a concern that there's just so much being depleted. You know, I mean, I basically have my own garden, so I don't like to buy outside, but I like to almost test what I'm growing just to see what the nutritional value is and making sure that my gardening is up to par, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, I have quite a nice large vegetable garden as well, and I try and grow most of my own parsley. But, of course, we have, you know, seasonal limitations.
You know, it's interesting when they were...
I make sure I buy organic.
Yeah.
Always. Everything.
Right. You know, when they were talking about, you know, Trump and his stupid tariffs with Mexico, you know, it's... When we were kids, you just didn't have, like, blueberries unless it was blueberry season.
Right.
You know, and it would almost be an interesting experiment to go back to that. I don't think we're ever going to go backwards. But, you know, people are pretty spoiled with what food they want
yeah.
and what time of the year. And I think it's, I don't think it's a healthy way. And I eat unhealthy, too, so.
Of course, no matter where we are, we have seasonal limitations. I have
yeah.
blueberry bushes in my backyard.
Yeah.
My husband's grandparents had a blueberry tree in Pensacola, Florida. I know you look puzzled. Blueberries don't grow on trees, do
yeah.
they? Well, if you have
like
one
trees.
That's about 100 years old, they do.
Yeah.
If you groom it, it's
yeah.
a tree shape.
We have some blueberries in our backyards, and we just, you know, had like four of them the other day. Oh, my God, they're tasty.
I was dismayed to discover yesterday that the blue jays are eating my blueberries the second they get ripe. I thought, why do I keep seeing green blueberries and so few blue blueberries?
It's netting. Time to put the netting up.
They're clever, those.
Yes, they
but
are.
But I've got blueberries, raspberries.
Oh, wow.
Strawberries. And I want to grow gooseberries. I've never tried growing them before. And I have blackberries out in my back field.
Yeah, like,
it's just wonderful. I'm
yeah.
in berry heaven.
So can you have blackberry pies? I mean, what do you do if you
well,
want?
Ogden has had a theory about fruit pie. He said that when you cook fruit, it turns it to a substance that your body receives as if it were drinking paint, and it coats the inside of your intestinal system, and he highly recommended against it. So I try and eat all my fruit fresh, not cooked. I try and eat everything.
So does that? So what about eggs, for instance? What's the difference between raw eggs and cooked eggs when it's taken in by the body?
Well, a raw egg is highly bioavailable. You almost don't have to digest it. It, especially if you've put it through a blender, your body can literally absorb it through the intestinal walls. Cooked eggs, the cooked fats in there. Unless you have optimum nutrition, your body is going to pile some of that on the internal linings of your digestive tract. This is part of the reason that we have so much heart disease in our country. Too much cooked fats. The cooked fats end up on the inside of the walls of the digestive tract, and that's part of his reason for the 2-month transition. And when he first started doing this diet, recommending it to people, he recommended a series of 5 colonics to cleanse the internal walls of the digestive tract. He quit recommending that later. He decided that you lose more friendly flora than the benefit you gain. But I'm glad I did it when he was still recommending it. And I tell you, it was astonishing, some of what I experienced. Marilyn Cohen, the nutritionist who coached me onto the raw food diet, had a highly developed system that allowed you to see what was being expressed from the body. The 3rd colonic was full of what looked like toilet paper, and I knew I hadn't been eating any. So I said, "What is that?" And she said, "That's us having a success of cleansing the layers of plaque on your intestinal walls." The 4th colonic had what looked like tiny white marbles I said, what's that? And she said, now that we've cleansed the layers of plaque, the little tiny cancers are being flushed out of your body. And she said, now understand that some cancers are helpful. Some of what, you know, fit into the definition of cancer are actually helpful. They'll eat parasites in the body, but not host on the body itself, or, and not attached to the body. But when there's plaque, they can embed in the plaque. The fifth colonic, I left there absolutely in a euphoric state, and it lasted for a couple of weeks. I felt like she'd given me drugs. I was joyous. I felt so clean, like that feeling you get out of a just absolutely perfectly wonderful long hot shower.
Just long, you know, that's a lot of
Assimilating
a junk inside your system, yeah. And people don't realize it's just kind of layer on top of layer. You know, you might do your duty, you know, in the morning or whatever time, you know, people do it. But, I mean, it's very little that ever really gets out. And it's just so far up into the intestinal system.
All the way through the whole tract.
Exactly. And so it's interesting when you're saying it took five times to actually really cleanse it. I mean, I'm not surprised because, you know, it's almost like... you know, even when you go in for a colonoscopy, it's I'm sure it's not completely cleaned out.
Well, one of the things that Ogenis frequently spoke about is that people often objected to the idea of a raw food diet for a couple of reasons. One is they thought that with raw dairy, they would be more vulnerable to salmonella. And he said, well, these kinds of organisms don't feed on the body, and if you're a raw foodist, they're going to pass right through the body, and you won't experience illness from it. It's people that have a lot of plaque in their system that they're going to get trapped in there and cause chaos and havoc.
With the raw diet, so are you talking about, I mean, do you have any grains? Is it pretty much meatless?
Let me tell you what I eat.
Yeah.
I'm a vegetarian, but a lot of raw foodists do eat raw meat. I'm not drawn to it, and one of Ogenis' primary directives was eat intuitively, trust your body. And this is one of the main points I wanted to make today. The conventional wisdom about dieting is resist your cravings, fight against them. This dietary approach is listen to your cravings, trust that as the communication from your body as to what it needs to be nourished. But once you're aware of what you're craving, upgrade the quality of your response. So,
what do you mean?
If you're craving ice cream, recognize what you're craving is sugars and fats. And what could you have instead? Well, here's what I'll have. I'll take a couple of ounces of raw butter and put it in a dish, and I'll drizzle raw honey on it, and then I'll sprinkle raw cocoa powder, organic, everything organic, and eat it with a spoon. Better than ice cream.
Wow.
And I might also put some raspberries in the blender and drizzle some raspberry puree on that. There's wonderful, wonderful things you can eat that will more than satisfy those kinds of cravings. And one of the most important points I wanted to make today is that a lot of the health problems that we have in our culture is from eating corrupted fats. Cooked fats are corrupted fats. And trans fats are fats cooked at high temperatures. But any cooked fats are corrupted. Your body is not designed to deal with those. And the older you get, the more your digestive processes are diminished. Most people start to lose digestive function in their 30s, and it continues. And by the time you get into your mid-60s, there's a very low level of effective digestion happening. But you can supplement your digestive processes with foods that are rich in enzymes like papaya, pineapple, those are two of the primary ones. And a lot of people take digestive enzyme supplements, which you can buy at any good health food store. Whole Foods has them, Sprouts has them.
So does that stand true with avocado oil as well?
Avocado oil is not cooked.
Right.
It's a healthy fat.
But if you use it in cooking, then it changes.
You corrupt it when you heat it.
Okay.
Anything that heats a fat. So here's what I eat. I eat fruits and vegetables. Most of my vegetables are juiced. I don't digest hard foods well. Most people won't digest broccoli or cauliflower. They're woody plants. We're not designed to digest
them. Very fibrous, yeah.
But I might, in the winter, sometimes I'll get a craving for warm food or for spicier food. And I might make a cauliflower soup that's cooked at a very low level. Low and slow is the way to go, so that you have the minimal exposure to heat for the nutrients.
So pressure cooking is not good?
It's a pretty high, intense heat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Low steaming or gentle sautéing is the way I would go.
So just long.
And if you want to eat cooked eggs, either sauté them gently in a little bit of raw butter on the lowest setting and just let it take longer, and it will cook. And you can always add a little water into the pan and put a lid on.
So what about poached eggs?
So they become like poached. If you're eating cooked eggs, you're best off to cook the white and keep the yolk raw, because there are a lot of nutrients.
So is that like
iron?
Is that a poached? Would that be considered?
Yes, a poached egg would fit in.
I was raised on an egg ranch, and
oh,
I mean,
wow.
I still love. Except that, I mean, you know, we were. It was mass production. It was a large ranch at the time of 50,000 chickens, which is nothing now. But
not if you're a Petaluman.
Yeah, right. And you know, it certainly was not organic. And I just think of, you know, all the nutrients that were really lost.
Well, I know a lot of people are going to respond to me saying eat more healthy fats, as if I'm telling them, go ahead, don't worry about gaining weight. And what will actually happen is the more healthy fats, uncorrupted, unheated fats you eat, the less you'll crave cooked fats. And after a while of eating only healthy fats, your body will start to use those fats to dissolve the plaque in your digestive tract, and you'll have a spontaneous flush and cleansing, which will mean you'll be better able to absorb living nutrients.
Yeah.
Well, I was, you know, I'm looking at the clock, and I'm
oh,
seeing
wow.
here that, you know, Marilyn is a certified clinical and alchemical hypnotherapist, and I want to know what that is.
Well, the alchemical hypnotherapy is the result of training I did at the Alchemy Healing Arts Institute in Santa Rosa. It's been in existence for about 30 years now. And it's based in Carl Jung's work. Most people are familiar with Jungian psychology, which the basis of that is his concept of the universal archetypes, which was validated by Joseph Campbell's work, traveling around the world for 40 years and studying different cultures that have these same cultural archetypes. So Jung's idea was that the personality is a complex of many different selves. And some of those are universal, like we all have the inner judge. The archetypal judge is a healthy, discerning judge. We can also have a corrupted judge or a split off, so that we have a healthy, discerning judge and a corrupted, harsh, critical judge. It can be directed at ourselves. It can be directed at others. The inner wise one is one of the archetypal selves, like the inner guru. The inner child, of course, and we all have a natural free child. Some of us have a wounded child. Sometimes the free child can't be found because it's hiding behind the wounded child. I work a lot in the past with addiction and depression. So what we do in alchemical hypnotherapy is we get a piece of paper and we draw a big circle on it, and we develop the inner family circle. So we put the present time adult self in a spot, and so that I could interact with the client, we talk about it like a face of a clock. So we might put the present time adult self at noon, and then we might put the inner child next to it, the divine mother self, the part of us that innately knows how a loving mother would act, is one of the archetypal selves. We may have our business professional self, or maybe there's the inner dancer, the inner lover. So when a client would present to me an issue, relationship breakdown, lack of discipline in diet, whatever they would come with, we would gather those members of the inner family that were specific to that issue. So the client would state the issue they're there to work on and call forth the inner family who wants to gather together to either participate in or listen to a discussion about this issue. And then with the client in some degree of trance state, it could be light, could be medium, it could be deep trance, I would interact with them. Who's there? Who wants to say something? Who has an opinion? Who has something to offer? One of the things that we would do in the circumstance of addiction, for instance, is we would bring the inner addict in, and rather than judge or condemn or reject the addict, we would give the addict a forum to say, how is it that you serve this adult? What is your role? The addict protects people from emotional trauma and suffering, helps people distance themselves from judgment or criticism. The reasons people drink is what we're looking for. What has you choose this, or the reason people choose heroin or smoke marijuana all day long, whatever it is that inspires them, we're trying to get down to the essence of why this choice. Why do you use pot when somebody else might use alcohol? And then we essentially go through a process. We give the inner addict an opportunity to express itself, and then the present time adult self says, who here among the inner family of selves would be willing to be an ally to the addict to help re-educate it, to help support it, to have permission to retire and feel like the adult self is still going to be okay? Who here would like to be its ally to guide it through this transition, give it permission to retire, give it permission to head up a committee to explain why certain things need to be done?
How does this, people will say it's genetic. Alcoholism is genetic.
Mm-hmm.
Drug use is genetic.
Mm-hmm.
And I have problems with that.
What
I'm hearing you say is that, you know, you just need to, like, talk through these issues in almost a group form, of a familiar group form. And
so I'm not saying it's absolutely not genetic. I agree there could be a genetic component.
Okay.
But I also don't agree that it's true that if your parents are alcoholics, you're likely to be an alcoholic. I was very close with a man whose parents were both alcoholics, and he was not. But he was an adrenaline junkie. He wanted to hang glide and race motorcycles and drive a Ferrari.
So there was something that...
There was something...
Yeah.
He had a need for speed. He
right.
wanted that energetic hit, but he didn't particularly like to drink or use drugs. It made him feel unwell. But it's an interesting... We could have a long conversation about alcoholism specifically.
I'm pretty sure it's genetic, given all the reports that have been made.
I believe there's a genetic component.
Right, but you can make your own choices.
But like I said, some people can have two alcoholic parents
right.
and never be drinkers.
And you can also have those urges to drink and learn ways to not have those urges,
right.
which is what you were explaining earlier.
So what we do when we're like, for instance, if we're working with alcoholism, we're looking at why is drinking the thing you choose? And then we bring in other members of the inner family, like the inner health conscious self, or the inner athlete, or the inner dancer. And we say, what can you offer that might help meet this need?
It's almost like you have a case and there's all these different drawers and you're opening up this one drawer and then you're shutting it and then here's the other person in the other drawer. You know, there's just all these, it's almost like multiple personalities.
Mm-hmm.
But they interact, but how do you put them almost in a sequence?
How do you
maybe?
Make them all get along together?
Well, that's true, right,
that's
exactly.
That's part of the point of developing the inner family
yeah.
circle because
yeah.
it becomes
right.
more evident that all of the members of the inner family circle are attempting to serve the individual in the highest way they know how, and that's the operative phrase. So
mm-hmm.
if they can be re-educated how to serve more powerfully like the inner addict.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah. Oh,
so
it's time.
I'm looking at the time. I'm not.
Time for some tickets to the fair.
Tickets to
anybody
the fair.
Call?
Yeah. Well, no, we haven't given the number out yet.
Oh, well.
So I have two free passes to the Sonoma Marin Fair at the Petaluma Fairgrounds. And what do we say, the third caller?
Third caller.
To call in at 707-981-7577 can have these two tickets.
Cool.
And again,
what's that number? I'm going to call right now.
Yeah. So get your pen. I'm going to give you the number, 707-981-7577.
Got it.
All right. So
let me squeeze in a couple of comments about nutrition, because one of the things I want to be sure to do today is address nutritionally some of the things that people are most concerned about right now. And one that I'm very aware of, and you are too if you go anywhere, is allergies, because there are people sneezing and suffering. So one of the most important things to do nutritionally for allergies is make sure you're eating enough healthy fats, because allergies may be genetic, you may or may not be able to get rid of the fact that you're allergic to something. But if your mucous membrane is not healthfully coated with mucus, I don't know if you've ever seen pollens under a microscope, but they're shaped like little arrows with multiple tips and barbs.
Yep.
And they're so irritating, and they stimulate histamine production, and your body floods your sinuses to try and flush it out. If you eat enough healthy fats, that could include raw butter, olive oil, virgin olive oil, flax oil, which I encourage you don't buy flax oil, but rather buy flax seeds and put them in your smoothie and let the blender break them down, because flax oil is a highly volatile oil and it decays very rapidly. If you're going to buy it in small quantities, keep it refrigerated and consume it quickly. Just the full spectrum of healthy oils and fats, almond oil, avocado oil.
Yes, I gave up all my oils and I just use the avocado oil now, but flax seeds. Now, for a person that has diverticula in their...
Okay, that would not... No seeds would be indicated for diverticula.
Yeah.
So it just folds in the digestive tract where seeds can get trapped.
Exactly.
So putting them in the blender and running it an extra long time on higher speed...
Could take care of that.
Should break them down.
I've heard that it's really not the seeds in the diverticulae. It's more you get a bacteria in there, and it's really the bacteria. And so I'm not convinced anymore that it is actually seeds that cause it, but that's what we've all been taught.
But we do know they can get trapped.
They can get trapped.
And that can result in your body building an infection.
That can be a system, absolutely.
Yeah.
But a lot of times it's really not the seeds, is my understanding, that it's actually bacteria getting in these little pockets.
Right.
So one of the other points I want to make sure to make today is regarding weight loss, because this is a challenge for so many people, and it's so tied to other aspects of health. The conventional wisdom is resist your cravings. This dietary approach is listen to your cravings. I did speak of this a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Upgrade the quality of your response. Try and ask yourself, what healthier version of this thing I'm craving could I eat? I make a chocolate cake that's 100% healthful. I put almonds in the food processor and make almond meal. I put oats in the food processor and make oatmeal. I put sunflower seeds and make sunflower meal. So that's my flour substitute. Instead of sugars, I put coconut meat in the food processor and blend it either to a fine powder.
Like out of a coconut, a real coconut? You
either
crack
a whole
it open
coconut
or
I buy it, you know, already broken down.
Okay.
For brown sugar, I use prune syrup. That's 1 cup of prunes and 1/4 cup of water in the blender.
I use dates.
Dates are fabulous for that.
So you use 1/4 cup to how much water?
1 cup of prunes to 1/4 cup of water.
Okay.
You can substitute these things in many recipes. Now, it's not going to have the same, it's not going to rise the same way. You know, you're not going to get an angel food cake fluffiness. It's a denser cake.
Mm-hmm.
I usually put raw cocoa powder in mine because I love chocolate. My grandmother was a professional candy maker.
Oh, really?
My mother raised us on massive quantities of chocolate.
I am not a chocolate lover at all.
I just can't get enough chocolate, but I only eat it in a healthy version with raw honey. And I'll sweeten the cake usually with coconut and with raw honey. Sometimes I'll add a little stevia. Those things can all be incorporated into your familiar recipes.
This is a lot of, you are amazing. A lot of great information.
Yeah. I spent a lot of years exploring all this.
And I mean, it's so clear.
Because I became a gymnast, a very competitive gymnast in high school, I really wanted to know how to optimize that.
And what
body.
Was your...
And, you know, the school, my high school bought one of those really fancy, expensive weight machines.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the school star athlete, and they wouldn't let me use the weight machine. And the explanation was that was for boys.
Exactly. Yeah, those
and I thought, okay, well,
lovely.
That won't do.
Yeah.
So I had to figure out how to build my
body. What did you and gym? What was your favorite?
Gymnastics.
I know. Which was your favorite? Floor, beam,
bars? Balancing was my...
Okay. I had a daughter who was a gymnast.
Yeah, balancing was my thing.
Yeah. Very good.
Gym was my thing in his
school. Yeah, yeah.
I got the president's physical fitness.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Jeez.
Well, our time is up.
Pleasure.
Again.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marilyn, you'll have to come back. And
I'd love to, and thank you for having me.
We didn't cover.
I do definitely have some information about nutrition support for recovery from cancer and prevention of cancer.
And do you want to give us an email?
I'll give you one particular.
Give you what? An email or something?
I can do that. soulcuisine@comcast.net. People can reach me. And I just want to tell people blueberries have recently been proven to be highly effective against lung cancer and esophageal cancer.
Mm. Perfect. Okay. Thank you very much, Marilyn, for being here. Janice, we're out of here.
It was great.
We missed your Jason, but hey, guess what? I got to talk a lot.
It was fun. I had a good time. Thank
All right,
you.
We'll
Thank
see you.
You
next week. Inside Petaluma will be back from 11 to noon, as we are every Friday. So come back again next Friday and go visit our website, insidepetaluma.com, for archived shows and our Facebook page, KPCA Inside Petaluma. So there you go.
See you next week.
Have a good weekend.
You too.
Bye,
everyone. Bye.